Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind. Here with Linda Bonella and Lauren Sykes. Helping me out, getting this together, bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. I've said that so often, I feel like Jim Cramer. Hey, I'm here to bring you ideas. Ideas about ways of thinking about things. Now, here I have a new idea for you. And for those of you professionals who listen to the program, listen up to this, because this may be a new way of considering things. The question is about shelf life of mental health. Yes, does mental health have a shelf life? What does that mean? Does it mean that at some point as you go through life, you may be a little crazy? Like, let's say that you're paranoid or depressed, narcissistic, phobic, you have addictions, strange behaviors, you know, you're a rebel and so on and so forth. And through some effort on your part, you get rid of these things. Either maybe you take medication. Maybe you work on it to find the underlying causes. Maybe just maturity helps you grow out of being crazy. And the kind of this kind of craziness that appears around 20 years old, that really manifests the most in the early 20s, you can get over it, and a lot of people do. A lot of people get over it when they have children, military, a whole bunch of things will change these early bent thinkings. But what we've noticed is a recidivism. What we notice is that there's a group of people that most people who get to a certain point of development have reoccurrence of these original things that were once cured, absolutely cured. And the best example I have of this, as is always, is my own frail brain. Yes, this is a story of the other day when I'm sitting around my house and a mouse comes in. I used to have a fear of mice. I used to have a fear of rats. But I overcame that to the point where I could play with mice. Right? I could play with them. I could pick them up in my hands. It was all easy and good. But then, one day, unexpectedly, a mouse appears in my house, and I am shaken. I could feel it. My mind is obsessing about it. Gotta get it. Gotta get away. You know. So I asked myself, well, where did that all come from? I thought that was all fixed. And then I thought of a number of people who have things that are fixed that become unfixed. Did you ever notice that about yourself, that you were like, let's say you were shy as a child, and then you overcame shyness, and suddenly you feel shy again? So this is what we're talking about today, and trying to find the reason behind it, and trying to see if we could deal with it in some way, because it's very disappointing to see yourself getting wacky the way you once were. Like, remember when you used to lose your temper as a child? And then you stopped losing your temper, and now you lose your temper again. And you wish you didn't lose your temper. That screaming, yelling, accusatory thing that you do, it's back. It's almost like you had it's a force that goes away and waits. Waits till you don't expect it and it comes back. Which reminds me of the theory that Linda was telling me about, which is about the pink cloud. Go ahead, Linda. What is that?
Well, that's a theory where when a person, I just learned about this recently, when a person stops alcohol, it really refers to alcoholism, and the person has managed to stop drinking and get a grip, or so they believe, on their addiction. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, from what I understand, they call this period the pink cloud, because it, in fact, it's an illusion that you feel that you've conquered. You've conquered the addiction. You've got a grip on it. You're in control.
Therefore, if I have a beer, I'll be fine.
Exactly.
Well, how long does the pink cloud last?
Well, the hope is that it will stay and then become part of your lifestyle, but it takes time. And that's where the person is very likely to relapse, because they feel the sense of they can go for that drink, they can get that beer. So the concern is that, you know, be cautious of that pink cloud, that in fact it's just an illusion, and that you need to keep coming to program in order to work through this addiction, that it doesn't just go away.
So they say, you just got to keep coming to these meetings, and these meetings in some way will help you stay up with it. Or if you feel that you're being getting tempted again, drop into a meeting. Very interesting solutions, you see. So here I was, free of it for a while, and I feel the temptation coming back. Now, how many of you relate to this in so many ways? Relationships. You know, going out with bad boys, going out with people, dating, fast sex, any number of things that you've done that you stopped doing, and then you feel yourself doing it again. Now, what is this called? Recidivism is a word that we use in psychiatry, which means you're going back to your old way. What if it's not an old way? What if it's a new way? So that's what we're looking at today. We're looking at why old stuff comes back. Now, the questions we have are as follows. Is it that it never went away? Or is it that it's coming back another time? Or is it that a new face is appearing? So let's talk about yoga first. I mean, yoga is a very good example. The reason that yoga doesn't necessarily work over time is because you not only do effective ritual practice, but you tend, when you're doing yoga on your own, to avoid the little spots that hurt.
Yes, Armand. We tend to become very settled into a routine where it's comfortable. And you are, in fact, ignoring those little crevices, those little nooks and crannies of our bodies, of our minds, that may be a little bit troublesome, a little bit challenging. So how much more comforting it is just to simply go through my routine and then kind of check it off and know that I'm in sync, knowing very well that we're kind of neglecting those pieces that need a little bit more of attention.
So the advantage of finding either a teacher like you or going to a class is because you can't ignore those things.
Exactly.
Okay. That's a reason a class for yoga probably works better. In mental health, it's the same thing. You learn to give yourself relationship and living conditions that keep your stress at a minimum. So this seems to be the goal in life. You know, at first you're young, everything is a problem, a problem, a problem, and you learn after a while, you say to yourself, I'm going to live with less stress, so I'm going to choose a different kind of relationship, right? I'm not going to date that person who is so wild, even though they are so much sexier, right? I trade one for the other. And you learn to keep your stress at a minimum. In the past, you might start a relationship with a person who is a bit wacky and say to yourself, well, you'll work it out. They're going to get better. You're going to work it out with them. Instead, eventually, you learn to avoid these kinds of relationships, and you go into less stressful, more loving, more comfortable relationships. This extends even to the work you do. There are jobs that you do that you could do with ease, and there are jobs that stress you. Our goal in life is to work with less stress. The same is true of our living conditions, what our home is like. Safety and comfort become the goal. You have an apartment, you have an apartment that you can't maintain, you can't afford, you have a home that you have to meet the mortgage, and it's stress, stress, stress. Our goal becomes to find the comfortable place to live in so that it becomes a home and not a reminder of a stressor. Now, there's almost nothing you could do with this, of course. It's almost a recipe for a happy life. Less stress in everything you do. Within each of these adjustments, like yoga, we look to avoid tension. Problems emerge as times go by. One of two things happen. First, any of the areas you ever avoided can manifest and shake you out of your comfort zone. So a place that you might have avoided dealing with, like, I know a woman who's afraid of death. And the way she deals with death is she never lets anybody talk about it. And even when somebody in her family died, she refuses to be anywhere near it. Well, she's getting older. Guess what's happening? People around her are dying. So that which she was able to avoid in the past, she can't avoid anymore. And the very word brings about a phobic reaction, which of course relates to the death of a parent at a very early age that she doesn't want to face. But for a long while, she could forbid everything. I know somebody else who's also afraid of mice. And they refuse to allow the word mouse to be spoken in their house, in their presence. And they condition everybody that if they're going to talk about even the mouse on a computer, she calls it a mini. She doesn't want to call it a mouse because the mouse is such a terrifying thought to her. That's fine until maybe she has to deal with it. That means that if mice appear in her house, she has panic reactions, not just initial fears. Another good example of this is, let's say you have a wonderful relationship with a partner and you discover infidelity on your mate's part. Anyone who has ever suffered this knows how it can crack through your middle. It's like being struck in the head with a lightning bolt, you know, and you feel it goes right down to your core. Everything you thought about, life, just kind of falls apart. Because there was a period of you where you were living without the stress, thinking you were married and everybody was happy and everything was fine, and you didn't notice that certain things might have given you clues that something else was needed. So then all of a sudden what happens is you discover that your mate is stepping out on you. Now, if you've ignored all your life looking closely at the feelings and needs of your partner and of yourself, you get demolished by this. And most people get divorced. Most people choose to get out of the relationship one way or another. You know, so we have this high divorce rate in America. This is true in America and not true in other countries, by the way. Europe, Italy, France, they're much more tolerant of this kind of thing, almost expecting it. But why does it take such a great toll? You see, now here you are, you have a happy life. And then something comes up, and this something comes up to challenge you. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI. We're going to take your calls related to this stuff. I think there are two reasons that there is a shelf life to emotional mental health that are not just situational. The first one, which we talked about, is we're confronted by situations that we've avoided. Okay, that's one. That'll come up. So you could be perfectly mentally healthy, perfectly happy, and then something happens. Deception, harm, your child gets hurt. Things that force you to deal with life on a different level, you know, financial stressors or stuff like that. Environmental disasters. But number two, the human body. The human body has, you know, the way humans are born, the way I see it, we were born to live, procreate, and die. That's it. Like every plant, that was our plan. When you get past the procreation years, you're supposed to be done. 60 years old, right, through menopause, that's enough. Men we keep around a little longer because they still have seed, and then drop them off the planet, send them out on the... that's the way it was supposed to be. That's the design of the human body. But the human body is very tricky. We've learned to trick that body. We've learned how to extend life. So now the human body says, hey, what you doing? You're supposed to be, I'm supposed to not have to worry about you past age 60 because you're going to be just walking off onto the ice and dying somewhere. Here you are, you're 80 years old. What do I have to do to deal with you? Well, here's what the body does. The body says, if you're going to be alive this long, we got to get you back to worrying about things. We're going to have to alert you again. And what it does is it sends you shots of worries. It sends you electricity to your amygdala. Your amygdala, this little part of your brain, your body says, okay, what are we going to do about this person? She's too trusting. She's too nice. She's walking around, but she's 70 years old. She doesn't know somebody's going to bop her over the head, steal her purse, and maybe hurt her. We got to get her to be more alert. So it sends you worrisome signals of electricity, which go into your mind, and your mind suddenly feels buzzed. And you wake up and you say, there's something wrong. And you don't know what's wrong. But you could just feel there's something wrong. And because this is what the body's doing, the body's going to engineer you to be more fitful. So the body gets you to worry about something. And if you ever notice people who are aged, as they get older, they worry more and more. And the idea of the worry is not because they really have something to worry about. You see, I don't worry. I am at the lowest worrying quotient of anybody I know, as far as worry goes. I believe that if something happens, I'll probably deal with it. But worry about it, eh. However, if I were unconscious, if I were the average person, as I was getting older, the brain would want me to strengthen my worry so I would keep my eyes open. So what it does is it sends you signals to worry about, and you're now going to go out hunting for something to worry about. Now, it's very interesting to watch somebody hunt for something to worry about. I've seen people who start looking through their skin. What is that, a mole or is that cancer? Is that this or is that that? What am I worried? And they actually find things to worry about. They get involved in relationships. They start worrying. I'm worried about my granddaughter. Because my granddaughter is starting to do da ba 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 ba, and I'm worried about that. And then I'm worried about my mother. And then I'm worried about my uncle. And I'm worried about my car. And I'm worried about, and there's all these worries, which seem like they have a good cause. But you wonder, what's this person getting out of this? Well, the person's getting a lot. They're getting muscle. See, they're getting worry muscle. The body is saying to them, I'm afraid that you're not conscious, so I'm going to keep you aware. Now, I would much rather that you were just conscious, but the body's afraid that you're not alert, that what you are is unconscious and that you're going through life and you're vulnerable. And the body has a thing. It's called the engineer. Each of us have some life force that keeps us alive. And I call this life force the engineer. It's a thing that believes that you must be kept physically alive. Now, the engineer has a rule. The rule is that what once was, is, and will always be. I'll repeat that. The engineer believes what once was, is, and will always be. Meaning that if once you had this problem, then that problem still exists, and you're going to have that problem in the future. If somebody with a mustache beat you up when you were a kid, that damage stays there. When you see somebody with a mustache, you respond as if you're going to be beaten up again. So it's what once was, is, and will always be. So the engineer has access to all of your memories. Now the engineer sees you becoming frail. It sees your bones getting a little weaker. It sees that you are alone a lot of the time as you're getting older. So the engineer scares you, gets you to practice, and gets you to worry. And in doing so, strengthens you for this haul through this later part of life that nobody was expecting you would be living. It's a long time that people are around nowadays. There are people in their hundreds all over the place. Whoever heard of such a thing? When I was a kid, we used to gather around the feet of a guy who was 101 years old, who fought during the Civil War. And we used to listen to his stories because he was the only one anyone ever heard of was 101 years old. Now, they're all over the place. This is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. We're looking at why people reappear with problems in their later life. So what of the things that the engineer does is it triggers extra activity in the amygdala, and it leads you to a sense of nervousness and alertness. The next thing the brain does, now, and this is lucky because at the same time your metabolism is slowing down. And as it's slowing down, it's getting you to match this kind of growing of the extra electricity. But when the electricity overpowers, that's where you start getting in trouble. The next thing the brain does is to look for something to worry about. And believe me, anyone can find something to worry about. You can all get wrapped up in anything from your grandchildren's education to refinancing your home mortgage. I mean, they just prey on you. You know, in all these advertisements on television and these things that are meant, you know, is your home safe? Or insurance is all preying on fear. Let me get you frightened. There are commercials that show people after someone has died, it shows how people can't handle anything. And these commercials are on TV trying to scare you into buying protection against dying. Or no, they get you into buying a tomb or something, or some way that your funeral will be taken care of. And at the same time, there are these other guys who are selling products that are going to keep you young forever. Stay young and healthy, stay young and healthy, and frighten you. You don't want to get aged. You don't want to get old. Because it's all part of the same conspiracy. We'll scare you into behaving in a certain way. So the brain looks for something to worry about. You get all wrapped up in this from your grandchildren. You could go a home mortgage. This is the new thing. Let's refinance the home mortgage. The worrisome mind is an automatic reaction to an inner sense of nervousness. Now, the engineer, this thing that I told you that's going to kick up this activity, can keep kicking up this way so that happiness is never realized. Because happiness is dangerous. Happiness is satisfaction. Happiness is laying back. It perceives true love as a form of death. This is big news, if you consider this. If you were the engineer and you were saying to yourself, how am I going to keep this person alive? The one thing we got to do is we have to remind you that you're not safe. We have to remind you that you have to be on edge, that you always have to watch. So now let's say that true love really came along. Let's say two people really met each other, trusted each other, loved each other, surrendered to each other, and felt that thing. Not the thing that happens to all new young loves, but that solid, beautiful, really intense, deep, safe love. Now, if I were the engineer and I saw somebody there, I would want to mess them up immediately because it's just too comfortable. This is dangerous. Why is it dangerous? Because you're going to let your guard down. Why do we not want you to let your guard down? Because if you let your guard down, any number of things can hurt you, not just your boyfriend or girlfriend, but any number of other things. I mean, you're not going to be keeping your eye up at the sky in case an airliner should fall. You know, you're not going to be looking out on the street because you're going to be walking around with eyes that are in love. You're going to feel like you're floating. And we don't want you to float. We want you to keep your feet on the ground and watch out, because the engineer has only one job. Not for you to be happy, but for you to be alert and well protected. That's it. That's its job. It's nature's way. Love is terrible to the engineer. Love is good if it brings babies, but once you get the babies part, once it sees this kind of laying around and feeling too comfortable, it'll create a little jolt of energy that'll zap this worry and keep each person distracted, tense, and certainly not continuously falling deeper in love. It's nature's way, because survival is the main idea. Now, there's only one other time, other than aging, that this appears. And this especially exists when a relationship is a relatively stressless one, when everything can easily slide into place and the couple have a clear path to happiness, then all of a sudden, worries come up out of nowhere. Where did that come from? Hey, what is that worry about? I tell you, my friends, it is amazing to be somebody who goes through life and sees your own problems, sees your neurosis, remembers what you used to be like. And here's the calls I'd like you to make today at 212-209-2900. I'm real curious as to you and what you have overcome that is remanifesting. What do you think? Like, you know, I used to be shy. So if you think about it, you used to be shy, and then you took on some kind of good strength about yourself, and your shyness disappeared because you were feeling really self-confident. But then you get older, and now your what substituted for your shyness may have been your cuteness. You're being attractive. You're being young, vibrant, and dynamic. And you said, you know, people like the way I look. They're welcoming me. People like me. And so you'd learn to smile so that people like you. And then people like you, and that's fine, and you're no longer shy. Somewhere inside you, you have this little shy place, but then things happen as you get older. You get a few more wrinkles, and suddenly people aren't doing the same thing they used to do. Suddenly people aren't paying attention to you the way they used to. You wonder if people are criticizing you. And the amygdala picks this up. The engineer picks this up and says, wait a minute, you're not safe anymore. You're a little older now. You're in a little bit of a danger. So it sends you worry, and it goes back right to you being shy. You get afraid to go out. How many people do you know that live in fear of leaving their building, their apartment, their house? You invite them out, and you say, come on out. Let's go play. Let's get out of here. And they just, no, I'd rather just stay around here. All because the brain has convinced them to be safe. So here we are with you today and tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll be doing a program about rebellion, by the way. So if you have any rebels around your life, it may be something we want to talk about because that's also part of it. So think about this with addiction. Think about this with romance. And think about the parts of you that used to be there. Were you once one way and you're no longer that way? And might that come back? So what are the solutions that we offer? Number one, does it need a solution? I don't know. You know, maybe it's just time to be more alert and more conscious. Hate for you to miss out on a real love for that reason, but okay. So let's say another thing is possible. Let's say that you have to do mental health checkups. Just like you get a blood test. You know, maybe you got to go talk to a shrink and say, how's my mind? Unfortunately, it has to be a shrink you trust, because if they want to get you into therapy and they need your money and your business, you don't know how they're going to respond to you, you know. But if you say, how am I doing? Tell me about this. Here's what worries me. Here's what doesn't worry me. Here's my relationship. Here's not my relationship. And you do that with someone you trust, your old therapist or something, not a bad idea. Another good thing is groups. Groups, you get interaction from people. You get people responding to you as well. So I like those. Part of the groups I really like are Al-Anon groups. They're really fine. Whether you have an addict in your life or an alcoholic in your life, they're good groups of people, good groups. So group is, I think, is good. Group therapy is terrific as well. But, you know, sometimes you get tired of just being in therapy. So maybe if you just want to do it, what you want to do is have yourself checked out emotionally by speaking to somebody. We're going to take your calls about this. The telephone number is 212-209-2900. I'm going to play you some very sensitive music today. And we'll be right back with you. Dialing now, 212-209-2900, but here's a little. Once in a love, the bite. Israel Kamakakawoli, I think I pronounced it right, an icon in Hawaii, from his album Alone in Iz World. He's also called Iz, I-Z, Over the Rainbow. Fascinating man, fascinating man. He died at a young age. He weighed 750 pounds at his death. He was always huge. But worked around it. He actually got married and had two babies, and a special kind of sense that everybody has about him. He was like a spirit that came through. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Your telephone, my telephone number is 212-209-2900. We're going to take some of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Armand, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Well,
let me ask you something.
Sure.
When I played that music just now, did it touch your heart at all?
Totally. I love it.
Which one? Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
Somewhere Over the Rainbow. His voice.
His voice,
so melodic,
right?
Man.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, like floating. Like floating on New York City.
He does another one, which I'll play at the end, called The Way He Does Wonderful World. It's just, he floats. It's exactly right. His voice floats. Thank you. Thank you. What's your name?
Barbara.
Barbara, how can I help you?
Well, there's something that's been plaguing me and, you know, causing a lot of havoc in my life lately. And it touches on things that used to happen a long time ago in my life, and I thought I was over it, but it's reappearing. And it's like fear of being visible, you know, fear of people seeing my picture, knowing who I am. And it started happening the more and more computers got more and more popular and people can find out anything about anybody online.
So at one point when you were younger, you had this little paranoid streak that you knew about, right?
Yeah. On the other hand, wait. I wanted everybody to know me, but two things were happening. I wanted everybody to know me and all my creativity. And on the other hand, I didn't want everybody to know me.
Sure. So let's say you wanted everybody to know what you created of yourself. But you didn't want everybody to know certain parts of yourself that you didn't like so much about yourself. Like, what? I'll make you a bet that you wanted people to know you as a very nice, creative person, but the thing that you were afraid people to see was how angry you get.
Mm.
What part of you was the part that you held the most secret?
I'm thinking.
I know. You have to hum while you're thinking so the radio doesn't go dead, or I'll hum for you.
You hum.
Yeah, what part of you are you afraid we're going to see?
probably the stuff that happened in the house, you know, as a child.
Oh, so there was some stuff that
happened. There was a lot of anger in the house.
A lot of anger, and there's a lot of shame.
Right.
Shame because of some misconduct on somebody's part?
Yeah, parents, both parents. Yeah.
Now, when you were a kid and your both parents were abusive in the way they were abusive to you, did they tell you to keep it secret?
Yes. Well, they indicated to keep it secret.
That if they didn't keep it secret, that you could get taken away or lost or something could happen to you.
Yeah.
Do you remember what they suggested?
I don't remember it being said explicitly,
no. Yeah. Now I notice I'm losing your voice a little, so it's almost as if right this minute your very fear is taking place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right this very second,
mm-hmm.
the part of you that didn't want to be seen, which is calling in my radio program and talking to Armand DeMille, who sees through everybody in some way or another except himself.
Mm-hmm.
So you have me looking inside and I'm uncovering this little thing. And there's a piece of you that's almost ready to break with it.
Mm-hmm.
But another part of you is starting to pull back. I wish I didn't make this call. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So here we go.
Yeah.
Are you ready, Barbara?
Yep.
Talk about it. What happened? You were physically and emotionally abused.
Right. Right. Well, two very angry people having children.
Okay. And how did the physical abuse take place? What form?
Hitting. Calling names, accusatory, that kind of stuff.
So just mental torment all over the place.
Mental and physical.
And physical hitting, right?
Yeah, so I think one was like cemented with the other.
Uh-huh. And somewhere inside you, did they try to convince you that it was your fault?
Mm-hmm.
So this is what you caused all this. You caused their grief, you caused their memory, mm-hmm. their misery, and you're still protecting them. Are your parents alive?
They are.
So, are you ever honest with them?
They can't hear it. So, yes, they can't hear it.
Yes, you are honest with them, but they can't hear it?
Yes, I have been, and they have no recollection. And
you mean honest about the past? What about honest about the present, when you get angry at them in the present?
I have, yeah.
So you're very likely to tell them.
Yes.
And you're very likely to say, here's who I really, I don't like that you did this. I don't like that you called up so-and-so. I don't like that you say that kind of thing to them.
Yes, I have. And they refuse to listen.
Yeah, so you see, there's your problem. The problem is you're not effective in communicating with your parents because your parents have this kind of block-up inside them.
Mm.
And in a way, you're still protecting them.
Mm.
So you've got to do something a little more dramatic to get them to pay attention, which includes sometimes if they do something offensive in the present, like invade your privacy or do something like that, that you say, I'm not going to show up. You leave the room, you slam the phone, you do whatever you need to do
mm-hmm.
to say, I'm not going to do this. What is the last thing your father did that really offended you?
He went ballistic. He just irrationally started screaming and yelling.
And how old is he?
87
years old, and he's yelling and screaming, right?
Yes.
Okay, and he yells and he screams and he's bent out of shape like crazy, and you say, my father's going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now here's a solution. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
You go to a Greek diner, you buy a coconut cake, you buy the whole big white thing, and you put it on your father's head. You just plop it on there, and he will go ballistic. He will not have a heart attack. And you tell him, this is because the way you go makes me very upset. What I'm suggesting is that you do something dramatic. You know, to wake them up a little, if they could be woken. But if not, don't spend the rest of your life protecting them.
Mm-hmm.
And the belief that you can't get to them, that's what protects them, and that protects your relationship with them. And that's what's at the basis of your fear of being discovered. Because it sounds to me like, are you a singer also?
Well.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, not really.
I know, but tell me about the really, not the not really. Tell me about the part of you that likes to sing.
The part of me that likes to sing loves to express and loves to move and loves to be lovely and loving.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Could you do me a favor?
Depends which it is.
I have a friend, Alex, whose birthday it is today.
Mm-hmm.
Could you sing happy birthday to Alex?
Now, should I call Alex up?
No, just do it right here on the radio.
Will you sing with me?
No. I want you to sing to Alex. Go ahead. I'm on your team.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Alex. Happy birthday to you.
That was beautiful.
Thanks.
That was beautiful. Let me just see. Hold on a second here. Here's what you deserve. Barbara, you're a brave soul, and I want to thank you very much for that tenderness of yours. And you should re-listen to this program. You could go to my website and say, go to thepositivemind.com and say, let me hear myself singing happy birthday on the air. You did that beautifully. And I saw where you were afraid of the high note. It doesn't matter. You're singing happy birthday. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you for calling in.
Thanks,
Simon. Sure.
Okay, bye.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Is that me?
That is you.
Fantastic. Armand DeMille. Oh, I love your program. And
thank you.
You're fantastic. However, the reason I called today was an observation concerning teeth. Okay?
Teeth.
Yeah. When people talk about teeth in the animal kingdom, they always look at them, the animals, and they say, well, the teeth are good for tearing or ripping or crushing or grinding,
right?
But when it comes to people, the whole point of teeth is how they look.
Uh-huh. Right, because they become vestigial. Because
when
the
they smile.
Yeah, because it becomes, that's the purpose of it, no longer for the ripping and the tearing and so on and so forth.
Right, it's not the function anymore. It's a social function versus a digestive.
How do you
function.
Feel about your teeth?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I need work on my teeth.
So you're very conscious. You're very self-conscious of your teeth.
Not really, no. I think it's an interesting thing that the way people interpret the meaning and the importance of structure in animal kingdom versus the social environment.
What's your name?
Mike.
Hey, Mike, if you were an animal, what animal would you be? First guess. What?
I would like to be an owl.
An owl? I was just watching an owl. This is remarkable, Mike. Listen, if you go on YouTube, look for a slow motion owl attack. It's such an incredible thing. They have did a slow motion. I saw this just yesterday. Slow motion owl coming in and to see what it was like. It's remarkable. What a remarkable animal that is. If you were an owl, what would you do that people don't know about besides not show your teeth for sure? Would you sit up in a tree?
I would just be.
That's what an owl does. It just be. It looks around.
You know, a friend of mine has a tree, and an owl visited his tree, a very big owl. And I talked to him about it. He didn't see it. He was out at the time. But I made a video of it, and I put it on YouTube. And I showed it to him. You know, I sent him the link. And he said, and I was talking about, you know, the being of an owl and their perspective and their vision, so to speak. And he said, his comment was that, yeah, their vision is so good because their head turns 360 degrees around.
So you are a very, you're a very wise man. Because
well,
you can see.
You know, it's the owl.
Listen, I thank you very much for calling in.
I want to say one more thing.
Sure.
That is song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the version you played. There's a version by Ava Cassidy. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
Uh-huh, no. No.
Oh, you have to listen. You have to hear the version of that song by Ava Cassidy.
Thank you very much. I will look it up and we will get to it.
It is the most amazing thing. And one more thing. The Rebel is a phase of consciousness, that's extremely important.
It really is important, and we're going to do that tomorrow, and I hope you're with us tomorrow when we...
And you have all those people on the street today, in front of Wall Street, all
absolutely.
The rebels.
Is that, are those rebels? Are they the rebels, or are the Wall Street guys the rebels?
Well, they're both...
You know, is it... I mean, who's the rebel in this case? Is the rebel the guy who's saying we're not going to regard people anymore? Or is the rebel the person who's saying we don't want to we don't want you to disregard us anymore?
I think one's a criminal and one's a rebel.
Yeah,
that's what I think. And and that when the system is predominantly based on a criminal activity or fraud, and somebody rebels against that, they could be at that time called a rebel, even though, like you say, they're not really the rebels.
Yeah, I understand. I remember, you know, I used to work in Wall Street when I was in my 20s. And I remember working down there when the hard hats and the hippies came face to face. Now, the hippies...
I've heard you tell that.
What?
I've heard you tell that story.
And what I remember doing was feeling what it was like to go to work and feel directly in the middle of it. I was a hippie, and I was one of the businessmen, too. And I said, there's something wrong with it. Of course, I was a guy who, at that age, wound up calling a meeting with everybody. And I found that there was one ingredient that got everybody to have a commonality. Did you remember what that ingredient was? Peanut butter. We made peanut butter sandwiches, and everybody came to peace around a peanut butter sandwich. And everybody said, oh, you must be like me because you eat peanut butter, too. And it melted the whole thing. Hey, listen, I got to get going. I got to get going. True story. 212-209-2900. Let me take one last call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
Oh, you are so wonderful. I never had the nerve to talk to you. My name is Joe.
Hi, Joe.
And I was listening to that lady, Barbara, speak about her parents. And I have a similar parent that denies everything, will not admit anything, and lies.
Yeah.
She's 88 years old and will not admit to anything.
I know. We're going to have to do one program just about what it's like to live with people who have just got, like, stuck in time, and they're older than they thought they would ever be.
Yes.
And how rough it is to deal with that. How rough it is to deal with it.
Yes.
And how rough it is for you to maintain your love rather than your wrath.
Well, I try with the love, and she's just very difficult. She hasn't spoken to me for 2 years. She's 88 years old in very bad health and will not call me even if she's dying. Will not make the call
and
will never say she's sorry.
Even my
children say, you know what, they wash their hands of her also. And I just don't know I feel it's not right, but I don't know what to do.
We're going to need more time to talk about this. Would you call me during my next... Call me during the next program. I want to take extra time to talk to you because I can't do it today.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Sure.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure.
Okay.
Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. We're going to have to be going because I want to give a minute or two to play this last piece of Is... And we'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Michael, give this as much space as you could afford to give it, but if you got to cut it off because you need station ID, please go ahead and do it. This is Wonderful World.
Them blue. icy clouds of white and the brightness of day. I like the dark and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people passing by. See friends shaking and singing, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you.